One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that aims to keep you entertained for a little bit of your day, regardless of what you've got on. It's a new intro. What do you think, guys?
I like it.
It's ambitious. I love it.
It's very general. We'll go with it. It's very broad. You know, that's what every podcast hopes to do. I think so.
But that's fine. I think we'll roll with it. Gentlemen, I'm surrounded by Robin and Alex, flanked on the screen, which is great. And it's been a little while since I've been able to catch up with you guys. So how are you both, first and foremost?
Not too bad.
Alex,
good, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, it's been quiet, Martin. It's been quiet without you being here. I understand you've been off. You've been, making memories as Daniel Radcliffe's body double.
Yes.
How is Daniel these days?
He's fine, but I don't really get to see him that much. He's doing his part. He's counting the money. whereas I'm out there, as a soldier of the film industry. But it is what it is. It is what it is. Yeah.
Fair play.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. What about you, Robin? Have you had a good week?
Busy. But I think we were just commenting before we recorded that you always enter a new year with the promise of a quiet January.
And February. No.
It never really is it? Catches you off guard.
But what are we talking about this week? That's important, isn't it? Well, how do we want to phrase this? Do we want to have it as the worst dictatorships currently still in existence? Although there's a slight caveat, isn't there? Because we're looking at kind of little known dictatorships. You mentioned something like Russia, and I was like, yeah, well, Putin's terrible. Of course he is. But that's maybe a little bit too obvious, a bit too petrally.
Yeah.
I want to raise awareness of some more obscure dictatorships that are out there in the world that we think... I think a lot of us are guilty of thinking, oh, the world is mostly free, there's just a few baddies. But actually, there's quite a lot.
A substantial number.
Of people out there. But there is, however, a scientific basis, or at least a scholarly basis. We're using rankings and information from not only Human Rights Watch in some cases, but in particular Freedom House, which was founded in 1941, which is an American organization that keeps an eye on the freedom status of countries around the world, and they have their kind of scoring system. So we've looked at those scores. So we're not just picking countries at random and saying, yeah, that's a dictatorship, and it's really bad. We've looked at that, and they've got pretty low scores on the freedom index. They're pretty low.
And it's interesting.
The ones we're looking at.
It's interesting looking at. We'll get into it a bit later, but it's interesting looking at the scores because the ones we've chosen, or like you might be wondering, okay, but where's North Korea on this list? And North Korea scored higher on like this ranking of freedoms than some of the countries that we're actually talking about today. So. There's some perspective for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True. And you think about that map that we might get up on screen if we can at some point for our viewers.
If we remember.
As a disclaimer, the US is not like this US company has chosen the US as the beacon of all freedom. It's actually got like quite a reduced score compared to a lot of other Western democracies, which is interesting. Cool. So looking forward to getting onto that. But before we do that, I would like to tease a riddle, if I may.
Oh, tease
Please
me,
Martin. Please do.
Tease me.
Okay. So the riddle is, I am tall when I'm young, and I'm short when I'm old. What am I?
Oh, I've got an idea, but I feel like there could be multiple answers to this. So I've got an idea.
There probably could be.
That's the secret, Alex. There are always multiple answers to these kind of riddles. There are always multiple answers.
Well, I've got an answer that I'm happy with anyway. So
yeah, I've got a really stupid idea of what it could be.
It is stupid. So okay. I hope it's on that level.
Hopefully it's stupider than my idea. But yeah. Oh, intriguing one. Looking forward to finding out the answer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And before we go any further, actually, I would like to take a second to just hand over to you, Robin. I think you've got a list of the people we'd like to thank.
Oh, yes, I do. I do indeed.
Lovely patronage.
We'd love to thank all of our patrons and YouTube members because they're wonderful people and they're supporting this channel and you help keep us going. But in particular, I want to thank Amy Licious, Cindy Hafner, James, Rashad Najar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, woo! Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapia, Ahmad, Peaswad, A Filthy Casual, and Simon Workman for their unstinting, generous,
amazing
silver and gold tier support. Thank you so much for all your support all this time. You are wonderful people.
Fantastic. And thank you everyone who comments, likes, shares, even writes a review for this podcast. And actually, we'd like to just dive into some of our favourite comments of the week. So, Alex, is there any that stood out for you this week as being of note?
There was. And actually, it kind of relates to the Patreon. So me and Robin had a exciting discussion on our A Little More Interesting series that we host over on Patreon. And we spoke about, it was one of our classic Musk watches, talking about Elon Musk was up to. So last week he was in the news for his Neuralink company had finally like actually put a brain implant in someone's head for the first time.
Yeah.
And that made headlines because it's Elon Musk. But, you know, there have been other companies that have done this, and from a transhumanist perspective, like, this technology is kind of interesting, you know? So the comment that I wanted to mention was just someone who commented on the post we made on the channel, at Sanguinius on Vacation 1803, who says, "While normally I advocate for transhumanistic tech, Elon's a schmuck. Don't trust him with your life."
Elon schmuck.
Which is a fair enough assessment, not too far off what the kind of conclusion that we come to. But it was an interesting discussion though. And what's both of your opinions on, like, do you think that, Martin, we didn't get your take on it, but what do you think? Do you think that humans are going to merge with machines?
Well, I'm so glad that you guys recorded a little more interesting on this, because I was in the car, was it yesterday? Yeah. And I was having to pick up my kids.
Yeah.
And so it said Elon Musk, and then it got onto the bit where it said Elon Musk has done the first, chip into this bloke's brain.
Paraphrasing there, I'm guessing. That was
but what's it going to be used for? And I couldn't stay because I was already running like a minute late. And I was like, I can't keep them waiting. So I had to jump out of the car, turn the radio off. And then when I came back in, it was over. So I don't actually know that much about this. But my first thought was like, oh my goodness, like, when I was younger, I had a pretty great, crazy drum teacher that was like, what they do, mate. What they do, mate, is they're going to start chipping people, and that's going to be the mark of the beast. And I was like, being like 10 or whatever, I was like, okay, it's a bit wacky. Okay, fine. Turns out he's right along. This is the mark of the beast, mate. Elon Musk is the devil. So that was my first thought. And to be fair, I've been pretty busy since yesterday evening, so I haven't had too much more time to think about it.
So
I will be listening to A Little More Interesting.
So basically, your immediate take on as an answer to that question is Elon Musk, mark of the beast.
Yeah. Big time.
Solid.
No, but it's pretty crazy, isn't it? I mean, how much control are you going to be able to have over someone by having an implant into the grey matter of their brain? It's just mental.
I mean,
so future. It's so Black Mirror.
I mean, yeah, we were kind of thinking of the ramifications of that. Like, oh, I'm sorry, you haven't paid your walking subscription, so we've turned off your legs for a bit.
It's mad. It is mad. And I'm incredibly skeptical and worried about someone who's clearly kind of teetering on the edge, being in charge of this.
Yeah.
It's a little bit worrying. We shall see.
I can't decide if I would be less scared if it weren't Elon Musk, if it were someone like if Bill Nye, for example, as the spokesperson for this, I'd be like, maybe, cool idea. But no, it's Elon Musk.
If it was Elon Musk week, in 2015, yeah, maybe it would be fine. But it's not. It's Elon Musk 2024, Elon.
Yeah, it's definitely not. Yeah. It's, the thing is, we've also had this very week, isn't it? Launched Apple Vision Pro, which is a big step. And you were just saying, Martin, think about the control that someone could have with a microchip. And I just thought, actually, it's quite scary how much control Apple might have, because it's an AR thing. Not, I thought it was a VR, but it's an AR headset. So you're walking around, you know, people are on the tube using it, and they think in their visors, the way it's, there's cameras on the outside of the goggles that project an image of your surroundings inside. But you could interfere with that, couldn't you? Apple will just switch.
Absolutely.
Press a button, and you just won't see that Apple employee sneaking up to you and stealing you. anything. Yeah.
Oh, invisible cars. Click. Bang.
Yeah. Damn it.
There's got to be some safety concerns with that. Walking around with all that shit going on in front of your eyes. Like, can't, yeah. Someone's going to get like into a proper accident.
Yeah. I think Apple's disclaimer says not for use in motion, but it's like people are just going to.
Yeah,
people are already using it on the public transport, so they're going to walk around with it on the same way that they walk around looking at their smartphone. It'll happen.
It's pretty wild. Wonderful, wonderful. Robin, did you have any comments that stood out from this week?
Well, I do have a comment. It's actually from our Uncovered channel, our second channel of little mini documentaries, video essays that go up there separate from the podcast. Go over there, check it out if you haven't already. And this one's from MJIO1Me. It's one of those names. I'm not 100% sure how to say that. So sorry for butchering that name. Let's call them MJ. MJ has commented on the video Hitler and the Spear of Destiny, which is about Hitler's obsession with the Spear of Destiny during World War II. And this comment just amused me because I've only started watching the TV show in question quite recently. And they said, I think Hitler was just a Neon Genesis Evangelion fan. Because in that anime show, the Spear of Destiny is a big thing.
Oh, okay.
But in classic anime fashion, it looks like the Spear of Destiny. It's called the Spear of Destiny, but it's got nothing to do with, you know, the Spear of Destiny, mythologically speaking.
Right.
It's just one that's fantastic. A bit like, you know, Hideo Kojima's naming systems, you know, for all his video games. And just like, yeah, it sounds awesome if you're Japanese, but in English it just sounds a little, little goofy.
Sounds a bit kind of quite literal, a lot of names as well. Yeah. Yes. Nice. Well, I've got a comment from Carolina, and this is from the Psychics Predictions video. So the interesting timing on this one, and bear this in mind. But they write, in 1991, I had an encounter with an interdimensional being. Good start.
That's a strong start to a comment.
That is quite strong.
Yeah. And he gave me a lot of information for the future. He said, when Queen Elizabeth died, there will be one more king. And after that king died, there will be no more king in England, but instead a president. Interesting.
Okay.
So, I mean, firstly, dissect that, you know. I mean, the news that came out this week, are we close to a presidency? A presidency?
Mm.
In the UK? What would that look like? So that's interesting. He also informed her about a huge wave on the East Coast that will be from Florida all the way to Canada. Interesting. And it will come at 3 a.m. Massive wave. King's dead. Anyway, these interesting
wave
predictions.
Stretching from Florida to Canada. So like the entire North American coastline.
Sounds like a long...
Blimey.
Quite a big...
that's a big wave.
Big, bold prediction. Yeah.
That'll be asteroid...
That's got to be asteroid, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, also, some encounters with UFOs, and people will get used to having aliens around. So, interesting predictions, Carolina.
Get used to it.
I don't think we're going to have too. We might not have too long to wait until we see whether the first one was true about the president coming after the king. We shall see. Anyway, with that said and done, shall we move on to the main topic of the week?
Let's do it.
Alrighty then. So, we're looking at little-known, terrible dictatorships, of the world.
In the world.
Terrible in terms of the suffering they inflict upon their people. Not terrible in terms of, call yourself a dictatorship.
You're a terrier. You are a rubbish
hardly
dictator.
A dictator.
You score okay for human rights. No, exactly. Terrible dictatorships. So, you know, we're talking bad records for human rights. We're talking oppression of minority groups. We're talking oppression of anyone that stands up to their regime. Anyway, who wants to go first with this one? What do you think?
I mean, my one, I would say, is probably that if we're doing the lesser known ones, mine's probably the most well-known one. So we could start with mine because it's like, then we can get into the more niche ones afterwards.
Sounds good.
But I wanted to discuss Bashar al-Assad, who I think is probably the most well-known one on this list. He is the dictator or leader of Syria at the moment, which is still engaged in a heavy civil war since 2011, I think. The Arab Spring uprising in 2011, I think the Syrian civil war
sounds
started.
Right.
But I wanted to mention him just because it's kind of like, it's interesting to think about what these dictators did before they were dictators. You know, like, I don't know. I can't ever imagine, Vladimir Putin or whatever, not being head of Russia.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, Bashar al-Assad, so he comes from a ruling family in Syria. His father, Hafez al-Assad, was the long-serving president of Syria from, I think, 1970 all the way up to his death. Bashar grew up in a political environment surrounded by Syrian politics, and his early education took place in Syria, followed by, and then he went into medical studies in Damascus, and then he studied for 4 years in London, in the UK, where he specialized in ophthalmology. So he was going to become an eye doctor, basically. His dad died in the year 2000. And Bashar, he was actually the younger brother. So his older brother, Basil, his name was.
Basil?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been nice. He died in a car accident. And so Bashar al-Assad returned to Syria to be the kind of heir, reclaim his kind of position as heir to the throne. And he received military training there, joined the Syrian army, which was a crucial step towards the succession plan. He kind of before he rose to power, he was seen as maybe a bit of a reformist. People were kind of optimistic when he came to power that he was going to be, with his Western education, he might actually bring some good into Syria. It might be a good refreshing change after decades of stagnant leadership.
But he's got a British wife, hasn't he?
He does, yeah. Yeah.
Bet she's a Tory.
I don't know. I'll be honest, I didn't look that up. Why don't you look, one of you look that up on the side? Because I am interested now that you brought that up. sadly, he didn't really bring about the political and economic reforms that were hoped. His early promises of reform gradually gave way to the reality of these entrenched power struggles within the Syrian government. And his presidency has been marked with consolidation of power within his party, the ruling Ba'ath Party. And so since the 2011 Arab Spring protests, the country's descended from what was protests to riots to an all-out civil war, basically. And some of the major controversies surrounding his leadership in this time has been political repression, authoritarianism. He's been noted for repressing political dissent. Political opposition's been stifled in the country. There's a tightly controlled political environment dominated by his ruling party. The government's response to the 2011 Arab Spring protests was particularly brutal. And a lot of this includes human rights abuses by the Syrian government, and a notably drawing international condemnation was use of chemical attacks. And I think this is like, it's all been fairly typical up till now. But there have been some particularly nasty human rights violations and war crimes committed by the Syrian government during his tenure.
Yeah.
So they've been accused, but I mean, it's kind of known Britain, France, and the US all conducted their own internal investigations and accused the Syrian government of this when it first happened in 2013. But they've been accused of deploying chemical weapons against civilian populations. There was the Ghouta chemical attack in 2013 where sarin gas was used, which resulted in hundreds of deaths. And there have been other instances of chemical attacks, including the use of chlorine and nerve agents. There have also been reports of barrel bombing and indiscriminate attacks. And this is basically, and these have been used in densely populated civilian areas. So these are crude explosive devices that are dropped from helicopters. And yeah, this has caused just widespread civilian casualties and destruction.
Wasn't there, I remember there being a news story, Alex, of like the Syrian government dropping like cluster bombs onto what are essentially are refugees, right?
Yeah.
Fleeing as well. Just horrendous.
They've definitely used cluster munitions on civilian areas. I wish I could say the specific instance that you've seen, because I'm sure it's been multiple times. And yeah, I think recently I just saw a story actually that in the end of last year, France they've issued an arrest warrant for Bashar al-Assad for his complicity in these war crimes. So there's an international arrest warrant out for his arrest currently.
Yeah. What does that mean in reality? Like,
I think it just means like if he was to ever go to France, they'd be arrested.
It's performative, really. He's not going to go to France. Like, no one, they're not sending any special forces to go and arrest him. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think there is
an naughty boy.
There's an international arrest warrant out for Putin as well. So it's like, would that ever happen?
The best you can say for that kind of thing is it's a psychological thing, is to make them feel restricted and say, oh, I can't leave my country because the rest of the world disapproves of me. I mean, it is, in theory, it's a shock. If someone says there's an arrest warrant out for you and you think you're doing nothing wrong, you might, hopefully you'd think, oh, what am I doing wrong? You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll have no effect. You're right. It's performative, but maybe it would have an effect.
I can't imagine this man who's done these horrific things is now thinking, what? Wait, France is out to get me? What?
What do you mean?
Am I the
birdie?
But yeah, researchers from the Global Public Policy Institute in Berlin, along with Syrian and international partners, claim they've confirmed or credibly substantiated accounts of 345 chemical weapon attacks across Syria since 2011. Yeah, and approximately 98% of these attacks were carried out by the Assad regime. Between 470,000 to 610,000 people are believed to have died in the fighting over there. Since then, actually, it's kind of stagnated in the last year. It's definitely not peaceful, but it's kind of like, was it a stalemate, I guess, between Assad's forces and the kind of the rebels. It seems like the chances of them ousting Assad now, he seems to have a pretty clear grip on power.
Mm-hmm.
It seems kind of unlikely that he's going anywhere. But interestingly, with that Freedom House website, they give Syria a freedom score of 1 out of 100. And that's the least out of any of the countries that I've seen, actually. North Korea, for example, gets 3 on the list of freedom. 3 out of 100. So, I mean,
that's crazy.
If you live in Syria, you are less free than if you live in North Korea. So
I imagine that the physical restrictive freedoms, I mean, but of course, North Korea has very, very strict physical restrictions too. But with Syria, because of the civil war, like, not only are you not free politically, but you're also very much physically oppressed due to what's going on, right? So I imagine that plays a part too.
That, I'm sure that's the contributing factor, But there you go. That's fun, isn't it? That's a
Thanks, Alex.
You're welcome, guys.
Should I lighten the mood? But maybe comparatively, I will lighten the mood because my country, if you won't mind me going next, Robin, is not quite as bad as Syria in terms of out and out misery, but it's still pretty restrictive and there's definitely still a dictatorship, and that is Brunei.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know much about Brunei? It's like a very little known country.
I actually don't know anything about Brunei. Yeah. I'm sorry if there's any listeners from Brunei here. But I mean, I'm guessing, Martin, you're going to tell me that that is probably unlikely.
I can tell you a little bit about Brunei. So Brunei is in Southeast Asia, just going for the top level stuff. In Southeast Asia, it's on the northern coast of the island of Borneo. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a marker as to where it is. Tiny population, so only around 450,000 people live in Brunei, although it's the second richest country in Southeast Asia.
Oh, wow.
Behind Singapore. Nice. So it's richer than like countries with hundreds of times its population, like Indonesia and all the other countries in Southeast Asia, because it has huge, well, you can guess why it's rich, right? It's huge natural resources, including gas and oil. And it is a dictatorship, but a very unique type of dictatorship. So it's ruled by the Sultan Hassan al-Bakaya. Apologies to the Sultan of Brunei if I've butchered his name, though. I think that's correct. I think that's right. And there's a complete... there's limited freedoms all across the board because of its structure. So it's a monarchy, but it's a it is an absolute monarchy. So the monarchy decides what happens, and the Sultan specifically decides what happens across all forms of policy. So they've technically got a government, but it's basically a series of advisors who nod along to what the Sultan of Brunei provides as executive orders, right?
Is the difference between a dictatorship and an absolute monarchy basically the absolute monarchy, the guy has decided to wear a crown? Is that basically the difference?
He just
wanted a gold crown and some fancy robes.
I think so. I mean, the royal family in Brunei dates back to like the 14th century, so it's been that same family for
surprisingly stable.
And so I think in some ways there's like a certain amount of acceptance of the history and tradition of the country and respect for the Sultan is what I understand. You know, I'm sure that there are definitely dissidents there who are suppressed, of course, but I think there's more of an element of that than in some of the other countries that we're speaking about today.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of anti-monarchists in this country and they basically don't do anything.
Exactly. And so, of course, if the monarchy was an absolute monarchy and a great ruler, then fine, absolutely fine. But there have definitely been some concerns around some of the restrictive policies in place, and particularly since 2019 as well. So in 2019, there was like the international community condemned Brunei quite widely because they introduced the full implementation of Sharia-based penal laws known as the Sharia Penal Code Order. This basically made the punishments for certain crimes are much more severe than they were before. And so these included the death penalty for same-sex relationships.
Yikes.
The main one. And also other forms of punishment like death by stoning, amputation for like petty crimes, flogging people for like, I don't know, extramarital affairs and that kind of thing. For drinking alcohol, and then imprisonment for a huge range of offences like defamation and blasphemy, that in most countries you wouldn't have, there would, you know, there wouldn't be any kind of punishment for. So the severity of punishment is all in the hands of this one person, which makes it, that's what makes it so dangerous.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty mad. There are definitely human rights concerns, and as I say, definitely around kind of the LGBT community with the Sharia-based penal laws. And although after the kind of the condemnation from the international community, the SOLTAD did kind of take a step back and say, okay, well, we're not going to be implementing, you know, stoning and the death penalty for same-sex relationships at the moment. So they put a bit of a pause on it, but still there's this impending thought that at any time that could be implemented for same-sex relationships.
Horrible.
The other thing which I referred to earlier is like the fact that there's a huge amount of wealth in the country, but it's only centered around very, very few people, which I guess is the same elsewhere too. But it tends to be around kind of like the Sultan and his government advisors, which of course then encourages corruption, like huge amounts of corruption.
Yeah, of course.
There are also environmental concerns because it relies solely on oil and gas. And of course the Sultan as the dictator is the only one who decides on their energy consumption policy. And he's in favor of oil and gas. So there's no chance that will change. Yeah, I know, right? There are also issues around kind of their finance system. They're quite lax in terms of taxation, and so it's a bit of a hotbed for money laundering, as you might expect. Which is quite a big thing. It's not as bad as kind of the stonings and some of the stuff you mentioned in Syria with the deaths, but it's also a symptom of having power concentrated in the hands of so few people.
I mean, how to make friends and influence people on the world stage. Money laundering. Woo.
Exactly. I read recently, actually, wasn't it, the arms trade is now like the most popular way of money laundering in the UK.
Really? What?
Yeah, crazy stat. Like when
that's worth looking into. Yeah. Gosh, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy, yeah. I double check on the stats around that, but that might be worth a little more interesting episode.
In the UK. Mm. You know, donate it to our Patreon page and let's get going, fellas. Let's get into the arms business.
Citizens of the UK, but not, I mean, the arms trade, but not the arms trade in the UK, right? Funding the arms trade elsewhere.
Because we sell loads of weapons to Saudi Arabia and places like that. And they're giving us dirty money.
Right. Exactly. Oh, I see. Okay.
And the other big cultural issue is that the Sultan of Brunei is considered the custodian of Malay Islamic monarchy. And this basically means that he's in charge of the philosophies of the country. So like stating the importance of Islam and that as the single religion and Malay culture and the importance of the monarchy. So this kind of feeds then into education in the country. You know, people are very much only receiving an education based on what this one person, the Sultan of Brunei, considers important.
Yeah.
Which is just absolutely mad. And that's what's being kind of promoted and preserved across the country. To the detriment of other things, but at the same time, that's not to say that people from Brunei can't study elsewhere. There were some Brunei students at university, if I remember correctly, so studying in the UK, but they're very much the elites of society, let's say.
Sure.
Cool, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, everything is in the hands of the Sultan of Brunei. So fingers crossed there'll be a little bit of relaxing of the Sharia law, but you've got to spare a thought for the people who are inevitably going to be marginalized, marginalized at best in society in Brunei.
It's scary. I mean, like, you kind of assume that, I don't know, like looking at that website that you sent, Robin, the Freedom website, the majority of countries around the world, it looks like, are under some kind of oppressive regime. Like, it feels like the majority of people are, and people that are fortunate enough to live in like democratically elected, you know, countries are in the minority. So
out of interest, where's Brunei, where does it sit on that? Because it's obviously nowhere near as bad as Syria, but I wanted to bring it up because it's such a little known country. Like, I'm sure some people wouldn't have even known that it had a monarchy, perhaps. Yeah, let me see if I can. Although the Sultan of Brunei is quite famous.
It's 28 out of 100.
28%.
Yeah, so 28% on the freedom scale.
And I take it that's not great.
It is the worst one in the like surrounding countries.
Right. Oh yeah, by far. Yeah, it's. For comparison, let's look at say America, which scores 83%, surprisingly low. United Kingdom 93%, and then of course Norway, Sweden, Finland, which score 100%.
Got it.
So,
did Scandinavia fund this by any chance?
Quite possibly. But yeah, 28% is pretty bad.
I guess the main difference, isn't it, between something like the US and Brunei is that those three branches of government, the executive, legislature, and judiciary, are all one. It's just, you know, the Sultan is the executive. Mm. He appoints, the legislature is his advisors, who ultimately he can ignore, and the judiciary is appointed by the Sultan, personally.
Yeah.
So it's like those checks and balances that exist in other countries just aren't there. Yeah.
But in theory, I guess you could have a nice Sultan who would be lenient and not so corrupt, in theory.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's been since the 1400s, I mean, I'm guessing there's been at least one, maybe. One who wasn't so
one
bad.
Good gag.
It does seem pretty reliant on the Sultan being like a decent person and holding decent values.
So it doesn't sound like they are decent by our standards, at least.
No, it seems like a strict, Islamic regime.
And yeah, if it works for them, why change anything? Why would you ever reform if the system works for you and you're in charge? Yeah, keep it the way it is.
You'd be okay with it, yeah. There we go. Robin, what have you chosen for us today?
Well, I'm back towards the Middle East. And people may have heard of this country, but they may not have. And this is Turkmenistan, which I'm proud to say on behalf of the Turkmeni people, is twice as free as Syria. It scores 2% on this scale. As the name might suggest, Turkmenistan, it's a former territory of the Soviet Union, became independent and free, in inverted commas, in 1991. But it was ruled by the same president who'd been in power since 1985 under the Soviet regime. So he stayed in power. He was appointed president for life until his death in 2006, I want to say. And then his successor has pretty much continued the trend and has extended presidential terms from 5 years to 7 years, and has done phenomenally well at completely free elections. For example, the 2017 election, he won with 97% of the vote.
What a unified
can't get better
country.
Than that, really.
It's always 97%, isn't it? Come on, just like, if you're going to fake it, at least make it look believable. I don't know, like, why are their egos that small that they have to be like, no, 90%, at least 97%, you know? They always account for the 3% lizard person vote, but like, make it 60% or something, you know? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is a free country, Alex. It has a parliament, it has multiple parties, they all support the government, and they all agree with government policy. They have no different manifestos, so, you know, that's just a coincidence. And any parties that disagree are illegal and banished, of course. Okay. There is no free press. It's only state media. Any journalists and activists who attempt to disseminate knowledge that is contrary to the government position are either sacked, they lose their livelihoods, they are arrested, often on fake charges, they are tortured, or in a lot of cases, they just disappear and no one knows what happened to them. They decided to go for a walk. City, just interesting, holds the capital city holds the Guinness World Record for the most marble buildings in the world.
Wow.
They're actually quite a resource-rich country. They've got tons of marble. They've got loads of natural gas. In fact, Turkmenistan is where the, what's it called? The pit of hell.
The
constantly
fire.
Burning fire pit is in Turkmenistan.
Oh, Robin, I just think of years ago I watched a YouTube video and I can't remember the country. I mean, you might bring it up a little bit later, but is this where there are only certain colour cars that are allowed because the dictator, I think the dictator only, he was like, oh no, it's only white cars in that city because of the marble.
Oh, you know, it could be, actually.
There was a decree. Yeah. I think there was a decree where he's like, yeah, no, all other cars are banned. You have to have only white cars.
You could be, I think actually, that's right. Yeah, I hadn't checked that bit. I was just looking at the broad, but you may be right, yeah. Because it's all white, yeah, white marble and gold statues, including a 60-foot gold statue of the president on a horse, mounted on what looks like, it's a plinth made of marble, but so it looks like a giant iceberg in the city. And then this gold statue of him on a horse on top of it. Horses are important to the culture, but he does lots of photo ops in the classic dictator mold of he's in a sports car, winning races, he's on a horse, looking awesome. There's also he did a weird thing once of they occasionally they'll televise their government cabinet meetings. And in one infamous example, he weightlifted a 6-foot long bar made of solid gold. And the cabinet colleagues are just applauding him and go like, woo, woo, you're great, you're amazing. Look how strong you are.
So embarrassing. I think it's just so embarrassing.
So bizarre. But as well as suppressing all opposition, which includes, by the way, any activists outside of Turkmenistan, and there are quite a few, because obviously they flee to countries where they can be free to criticize and report on the human rights abuses in Turkmenistan. They, a lot of them sometimes disappear mysteriously, or in one case, their house burnt down one day after officials from Turkmenistan had been asking about where they lived. Another time they, if they make the mistake of going to a country such as Russia, who are quite friendly with Turkmenistan, they'll get deported back to Turkmenistan for goodness knows what happens to them then. Those kind of things. And in other, sometimes countries which are we would consider to be free allies of the West and against countries like Turkmenistan, Turkmenistan says, oh, this person has committed a crime. Deport them back to us. Extradite them. And, you know, these Western countries are like, well, okay, we'll believe you. And then send them back, and then that journalist or whatever gets
disappear.
Yeah, yeah. They also do
great stuff. Unfortunately, Western countries.
Good job.
Despite all their resources, there's been a long-term food crisis, starvation. Basically, inflation has skyrocketed through the roof. There's just not enough resources. All the shops are state controlled, so they're very strict with their kind of resources and rationing out who gets what, and prices are just through the roof. But the rich and the powerful are okay, but the ordinary people, of course, are starving a lot of the time. But this is all denied by the government, of course. But they rely on forced labor for a lot of their economy. For example, any government employee is seasonally forced to go into the cotton fields to pick cotton as part of their job.
Right.
Out of the office and into the fields, get cotton picking, stuff like that.
So government employees? Is that?
Yeah, government employees. Yeah.
So are they...
Could
they just quit their jobs? I'm confused how that works, because they're employees for part of the year and slaves for part of the year. How does that work?
Yeah, so I think salaries don't work in exactly the same way that we might think of it. You know, they are given the means to survive, and it's better to be in government than it is to leave and be out of the government. But you have to go and do this cotton picking when they tell you to. And like they're marched out by the military. That's another thing. Big military parades. He likes his military parades.
Of course. Which dictator doesn't?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be a proper dictator if you don't like a good military parade.
Same-sex relationships are illegal, of course. Abortions are illegal after 5 weeks. You're allowed to do it for the first 5 weeks. But I don't know how they measure this exactly, but one human rights group measured that 60% of the female population of the country have no bodily autonomy. There's a deliberate suppression of sex education, and women's rights generally are just pretty poor. Religions are banned except for state-approved ones. So that includes Islam is illegal. I think Christianity is illegal. I'm not quite sure which religions are legal.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Usually they kind of support it with a single religious ideology, right?
Yeah,
because it's almost how people toe the line. It's like,
it's worked into the kind of authoritarian
slash God. Dictator.
Yeah, because it's for ideological reasons they can justify themselves being in power.
Yeah.
So that is an interesting fact.
It is interesting. But I guess that's maybe a hangover from being part of the Soviet Union, which is obviously...
Right.
That's a good point.
So there's some kind of weird relationship with the religion there. So some religion is allowed, but it's state-controlled, basically, or state-sanctioned. And then the internet, of course, is tightly controlled. It's similar to China, or more like North Korea, actually. In particular, VPN providers are really cracked down on. People using VPNs are hunted and arrested, and people installing VPNs and building them are arrested and just disappear into jail.
Wow.
It's quite strict, but there's a certain degree of internet connectivity, and that's allowed. There's a certain degree of VPNs that are allowed, but then once you hit a certain level, which is quite a low threshold, the state cracks down. So it's really kind of weird just how much they allow. I guess it's kind of give them a little bit and then we'll stop them using it against us. It's more to do with disappearances, torture, arbitrary arrests, and detentions on the borders. People aren't allowed to leave. Passports aren't issued. They prevent access to foreign embassies so that you can't get a visa to go abroad. And of course, violence against women and gay people. And it's all kind of, it's incredibly repressive, but compared to, say, the mass murders and executions that go on in Syria and even other nations, it might seem not that bad.
It's a stable dictatorship in some ways.
Yeah,
stable.
In a weird way. Yeah, there is protest, but there's not much, and it's dealt with pretty harshly. And that, seems to be it. People have no freedom at the same time as, it's stable. Yes.
I mean, I guess that's the, I'd like to preface this by saying this is not a pro-dictatorship statement I'm going to make, but we kind of assume with dictatorships like, they're going to crash and burn and there's going to be revolutions and it's all going to turn into a civil war eventually, like Syria and stuff. But that's just not the case normally, is it? Like there have been stable dictatorships for hundreds of years.
To the oppression in quite a big part, right?
Yeah, it works, sadly.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Castro in Cuba, just how long he was in power.
Yeah. And we don't even have to look that far, sadly, these days, do we? I mean, that's, even in Europe, there's Lukashenko, and just beyond him is old classic Putin.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And of course, let's be honest, in the UK, there's been a huge swing towards authoritarianism in our government. It was always there. It was always under the surface, but it's really come out in recent years. And in the lead up to an election in the near future, it seems to be coming out even more. There's some little drips and drabs here and there. So we're not immune, of course. I mean, we have a monarchy, but it's luckily not an absolute one. Until we become a republic with a president, of course, according to the predictions.
We shall see.
We shall see.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. Well, fair amount of doom and gloom there, but I guess, what do we want to ask our audience to add to the conversation? I mean, are there any others that you've...
Who's your favourite dictator?
Are there any facts about any of the countries that we mentioned that you'd like to bring up in the comments? Please do. But I think it's just an interesting topic, isn't it? Especially when, Syria, I guess, was covered quite widely in the news, but Turkmenistan and Brunei are two countries that are definitely not mentioned much.
Yeah, they keep to themselves and the Western media just ignores them.
You always kind of hear of like North Korea as the quirky, like, dictatorship with all the wacky rules and stuff that they have to follow. Whereas, that's an interesting fact about the cars in Turkmenistan all having to be white.
Well, that's the thing, I think, maybe because North Korea, maybe it's kind of, it's a bit publicity hungry, isn't it? like the nuclear tests and things like that.
And they like to saber rattle, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's the phrase. Yeah. Whereas Turkmenistan kind of, it's a hermit kingdom as well, like North Korea. When foreign visitors are allowed, they're very controlled. Not as tightly controlled as in North Korea, apparently, but they're definitely followed and supervised. So,
yeah, if you want an authentic dictatorship experience, head to Turkmenistan. That's their that's the tourist board info. Yeah. Do let us know and add your comments. Plus, would you go to any of these countries? Would you be intrigued to visit? Gentlemen, would you like to know the answer to the riddle?
Oh, yeah, please.
The top end. Okay.
Could you read it again one more time?
Of course. Of course. I'm tall when I'm young, and I'm short when I'm old. What am I? It's stupid. It's a bit stupid.
Is it an adjustable chair?
What?
I like it. Because it breaks and sinks, right?
Well, because...
What?
It's not an adjustable chair.
I've got a guess. Is it an adjustable chair? What? You can adjust it whenever. It doesn't matter, like, whether they're old or young. Is it a candle?
Yo! It is a candle. Well done.
Good one. That's
great guess. Well done, Alex. And well done for everyone at home, or anyone at home who got that. Bit of a rubbish one, because it could be like, I don't know, a person. You get smaller.
Yeah. People shrink. Yeah, it's a thing.
But anyway, it is a riddle.
No, thanks. That was a good one.
That was good. Thank you, Martin. Cool. Thank you, Martin. No, thank you, Robin. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. God bless everyone. And with that, see you all next time and have a good week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.